This is file number 12, cycle 2. This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing John Harney, Jr. about the White Hart, real estate, the Sarum Tea, anything else that he can think of. And today's date is December 16th, 2015. And we'll start with the genealogical information.
Okay.
What is your name?
Okay, John Harney, Jr.
And where were you born?
Ithaca, New York.
And your birth date?
4/21/54.
And your parents' names?
John David Harney and Elise Dublin Harney.
How do you spell the Dublin?
It's some German thing. It's
okay, D-E-U-B-L-E-I-N, okay. And do you have siblings?
Yes, Mike, Keith, Elise, and Paul.
Wonderful. Tell me your educational background, please.
Okay, Salisbury Central. Oh, first Town Hill.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's right. Town Hill until grade 4, and then they decided that there wasn't any point in spending more money, and back to public school. And then Salisbury, and then Williams.
And you got a degree?
Religion.
All right. B.A.? B.S.?
Yeah,
B.A. Okay. I have a couple of wonderful hunting and trapping stories about you and Skeet Moore. Do you have any that you'd like to add?
No, those are pretty much...
That's pretty much it, huh?
That's... Skeet was... I was thinking about Skeet yesterday.
Yes.
Just wonderful.
Oh, yes.
And I just remember out in his backyard, and he was showing us how to prepare the traps and how you had to boil them in beeswax and cover them, get them hot, and then put beeswax on them.
Why?
So there would be no scent.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
He was remarkable. He was, wonderful.
Yes, he was. Yes, he was. Actually, I think I had his granddaughter in school.
Oh, really?
You know, the families go down.
Yeah.
Did he teach you trapping as well as hunting?
Yes.
And where did you do these things? Did you go up on the mountain?
Usually up on the mountain without licenses for deer.
And then
the trapping was around Salisbury School. So the different streams that flow off, but usually either on David Harris's land or Salisbury School's land.
Okay.
And he would just be remarkable in just pointing out things. As you would walk up a stream, he would point to... He just knew the animals better than the animals knew themselves.
And I imagine that he was a real woodsman, knowing about tracks and scat and stuff like that.
Oh, he knew everything. And he walked like an Indian, quiet. He just knew anything and everything. And, I know, there was one funny story. What was it? Some friends, Bill Kelsey, were fishing, ice fishing down on Long Pond. And they couldn't get down, and they left their truck up on Long Pond Road.
Oh, dear.
And they came back up from ice fishing, and it wouldn't start. And they finally opened the hood, and there was a missing battery. And the outcome was that Skeet drove by, and his battery, he knew, was weak, and he just replaced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they finally found out who was the cause of that.
Oh, my God.
And they repaid him when they found his truck up on the mountain when he was fishing up on the mountain and just took his battery.
good. When you got game of any kind, what would you do with it? I mean, if you got a deer, would you use the meat?
Yeah.
How about something with a pelt? Would you sell the pelt?
We're supposed to figure out how to sell the pelts. But we ended up just putting them in a freezer, so they're still in a freezer somewhere. But he just would describe the habits of a raccoon or a fox or a lynx or an otter, and he just knew everything.
Yeah.
And a muskrat, he just knew what they did, how they thought, what they ate, what their behaviors were. And that was his biggest thing, is that you had to observe and know them better than them.
And, good scientific method.
Observation. Observation.
Perfect.
It was all observation. Perfect. And that carried on, because you could only trap so long until you finally go, I can't do this. And And that happened with me in catching an otter. And,
I heard that story. That's an excellent story.
I just didn't want to. That was it for me. so I pulled the traps. But it carried on because in walking through the woods, you still pick. You learned from Skeet to be observant and pick up all sorts of sign and observations. And so that was the biggest lesson.
Have you passed that on to your children?
I think maybe more Beckett, possibly Beckett. He seems like it. Griffin could care less, as could Kathleen.
Yeah, okay, all right. And Beckett is in college now, isn't he?
Yeah, up in Cornell.
Oh, my word. That seems to be a family tradition.
He was funny, but he didn't use any family connections to get there. He did it all himself.
He just said,
so he got in himself, he found his scholarships. Good for him.
Yes. Oh, yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Now, we're going to talk about the White Hart, and your parents ran it from 1960 to about 1984.
Something like that.
Right. What do you remember about the country store?
I just remember it was remarkable with all of the different, you could go in and go through the different aisles, and there was just all sorts of different stuff, and I just remember Mom, and she was the energy behind it, and it was a remarkable, it was just a wonderful thing. It was just, you go into the White Hart, up that those beautiful steps and deck, and then go through the front door and take a left, and there it was by the, you would pass the wooden Indian standing there.
What do you remember about the wooden Indian?
Usually Dad standing next to him getting his picture taken. So, and then, of course, in the other room during Christmas, like now, would be Olive DuBois's gingerbread house.
Tell me about the gingerbread village.
She would start, and she would make, it would become more and more involved every year. Mm-hmm. It was just incredible.
Oh, she would bring it to school first.
Would she
first.
Bring the whole thing?
The whole thing would come to school first, and we would sign up to bring our children down to see it.
Really?
And the children remembered from year to year, oh, that's new, oh, she's added this, and that was their Christmas treat, it really was.
Yeah.
And then she'd transfer it to the White Hart.
No, Olive and Jimmy were, the problem is all of those people have disappeared. And
that's why I'm doing the oral history.
Yeah, that's right. No, it's a different
time. So they'll be
time.
Remembered.
No, so I think of them. I think of Frank Markey and other people, Skeet. Mm-hmm. And remember Frank with his big waders on, putting the docks out at the Grove.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Fred Romeo. And
oh, yes.
Fred's another guy to talk to.
Fred won't talk to me.
He won't?
No. I've tried repeatedly.
Okay.
He'll talk to me at the dump. He'll talk to me at the post office.
Oh, you can't shut him up.
But not with the tape recorder.
Okay.
What do you remember about Olive particularly?
Stern.
Very.
Yeah. I only lasted one night as a night clerk.
Tell me about that.
Yeah, she goes, the cash drawer was completely off. And so that was it for me. I was shipped into the washing dishes.
And, oh, gee. Oh, my.
Yeah.
She ran a very tight ship.
Oh, she ran a very, she was the one who kept Dad in check.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Now, she was there when the Nortons ran it, wasn't she?
Yes, I think so.
And there were a few others that were there before your parents took it over.
Oh, yeah. But, Jim Norton was there. Mm-hmm. So he had Jim and Olive that were his throttles and governors. And because otherwise he would go to, when he was running for state rep, he would go to Winston, and they would ask him what would he do if elected to help Winston, and his comment would be, the best thing for Winston is another flood. And so he didn't win that election. So,
ooh, that was not politically correct.
No, it was wonderful.
Your dad was a wonderful person.
Oh, he was a great guy.
Absolutely.
Great guy.
And we tried to get him on a number of occasions, and it just didn't work out. Bobby Day,
remember, Dad was the first, as far as I know, was the first business owner in the state to figure out how to bring, or to make an emphasis on bringing people in the state school into the community to work at the inn and be out of the school.
Yeah.
And then he had like 15, 20, 25 people over 20 years.
Oh, really?
Oh, it was huge. Bobby Day is just one drop in the bucket.
He's the only one I knew.
Oh, yeah. No.
Oh,
huge.
And they came from what, Southbury Training
School?
Yeah,
Southbury. Yeah. So he was, I'm not sure, but from what I remember, he was one of the pioneers as far as that, of integrating people from Southbury into the community, into jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had Bobby Day. Oh, yeah, you had
Scotty,
you know, and also you had a ton. George, Bad George, and
who's Bad George?
Yeah, George was one of the guys, and
okay.
I think he was drinking too much, and he threw Jimmy Norton off the back steps and broke his arm.
Ooh,
and
but
they still kept him, and so you had. Most worked, some did not, but it gave him a chance, and Bobby is the last remaining, last standing.
And I think I understood from Mrs. Harney Sr. that when the inn was closed,
yeah.
Bobby was sort of caretaker and shoveled and kept everything ticking over.
Yeah, and it was important that there was a transition.
Mm.
So they watched over a number of the people. They found when the inn sold, they found George a job at an inn or a hotel out in Chicago. Scotty went to Riverton.
Oh, he was the one that went to Riverton. Okay.
Yeah. Right. And there was a dozen. I mean, there was quite a few.
But it showed a caring for the individual.
Yeah.
And not they have to stay they have to stay institutionalized.
Right. Exactly.
You know, and what a wonderful legacy it is for the young men that came and the family that supported this.
Right.
You know, I was delighted when I did the talk session with Mrs. Harney and her daughter that Bobby Day was there and they got him to talk a little bit too.
Right.
Which was all part of it. Which
right.
was a great part of it.
No. I think that was big, actually.
It was very big.
And they didn't drop him when they sold the inn.
No, and that's the important thing.
Right.
That they cared.
Yeah.
And pass them on to something else that they could do.
Right.
Dining room.
Right.
Who ran the dining room?
I think it was Mom who was the hostess.
Okay.
She did country store, dining room.
And the dining room. Your dad did the kitchen and the
and
everything else.
Right. The catering.
Yeah.
And then remember he had something with Jimmy Norton to run the food up at Indian Mountain.
Was that the Guardian?
Yeah.
That was the Guardian. Right. And he worked with Jim Norton on that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
All right, that I didn't know.
Yeah, no, Jim Norton would be a good guy to...
He won't do it either. I have tried.
Oh.
You know, and that's fine. I ask.
Yes.
And if they say, no, I'm not comfortable, so be it.
Right.
I'll get it another way.
That's exactly right.
You know?
That's exactly right.
How long did the catering go at Indian Mountain?
Right away. I mean, Jimmy Burns was the cook, and Jim Norton, and then Dad. And so they, I don't know if Jim Burns is still around. I don't know.
Are you sure it's Jim Burns?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought it was.
It may be. There was a Burns there, I think, when my husband was teaching there. But I didn't remember it was Jim, but you're probably right.
It might be. I don't know. Okay. Yeah, so.
And didn't they do catering parties and that sort of thing? But that had a different name, didn't it? Wasn't that Salisbury Fair?
Maybe. I don't know. All I know is we had to work for him.
You didn't have a choice.
Yes.
What did you do?
We just remember sorting silverware standing on milk crates at the White Hart Kitchen.
Mm-hmm.
And then working with Bobby and Scotty on the dishes and in the dishwasher. And then working as far as prep and working, making...
Oh, you had all the grunt jobs, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, making all the nut balls that...
I heard about the nut balls.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was very funny. And so Bobby Day was my supervisor for some time.
Oh, good. And I bet he was good.
Yeah, he was. He wanted it done right,
Well, that's important.
Yeah.
That's important, working to a standard.
Yeah, no. And then you had the different chefs, and Danny was one of the last chefs.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask
Wonderful.
You about that. Do you remember any of the other chefs?
I remember there was a one black guy, Tom, who was there when we got there, and he took care of us kids because we were young, six, seven, or whatever.
Yeah.
And I just remember in marvelous blueberry pancakes, and he would treat us. And then I would also remember that as we got older, that all of the state police would come in for their morning breakfast, and everyone would stand with Dad, and whoever the cook was would just put out breakfast, and the state police would, have breakfast there, standing up, talking to Dad, and the cook, and everything else, and it was quite something.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You know, I don't think that even, I don't know if it happens anywhere today, but
probably not.
No. And then, it was just, where does that happen?
Well, your father was a very gregarious, outgoing soul.
Yeah.
And always made people welcome.
Oh, yeah.
And that was the feeling that you got when you walked in the front door.
Yeah.
And it didn't make any difference who you were.
No, it didn't.
And I would think the state police would have a good breakfast, and they would enjoy talking with your dad, and it was a nice start to the day.
It was a nice start, and then he was influential with Stan Sullivan, getting him to be in charge of security for Mescal when he was governor.
How did that happen?
At that point, Dad had influence.
How?
He had political influence. I don't know how. Because he was a friend of Mescal's.
Okay.
And helped get him elected, I guess. Because I just remember, somewhere in the 60s, up on Belgo, at the house when we were in Belgo, looking over, and there was Dirksen.
Oh, Senator Dirksen?
Yeah, because he was here. And so there the two were in their white shirts and narrow black ties and black pants and black shoes, sitting out in the backyard chatting.
Not bad.
Yeah.
Did your dad ran for state office or?
State office. Usually he ran, I think, a couple times for state rep. But since he did not have a governor, on what thought actually appeared on his lips. And then he ran for selectman a couple times, and Mom got tired of that, and so she showed him how to do it and won. So it was her and George Kiefer and Charlotte, which probably was a nice...
Oh, it was a good combination.
It was a great combination.
It was a good combination. Other than being kicked off the night clerk crew and doing the prep in the kitchen, was there anything particular that you did at the White Hart? Or just whatever was going on?
It was basically busing, helping with the catering, waiting. We waited on, who's the actor with the blue eyes who raced up here?
Paul Newman?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we waited on him. And it was like 16, 17 waiting on him for lunch and his race crew. And they were just laughing in the kitchen, dining room and everything. And he had like a cheeseburger or something. And so I was picking up the plates and I said to him, is the lunch okay? And he looked at me and he goes, son, this is the best I've had since Rocco Welch. And and his entire crew started laughing. And I decided to retreat. But I'll never forget that. I thought that was just the most, oh my God, I can't. So it was effective.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. He was good at that.
Yeah. Yeah, he was remarkable.
Yeah, Foster used to work at Rotary over at the track, and he would chat up Paul Newman about cars.
Yeah.
And he was fine about cars, but didn't really care to be hounded by
anything public. Else.
And he'd have a short, sharp comment for people that were pestering him.
Yeah. Oh, did he? Yeah. He just looked like a remark. He was just that one experience with him. I was like, oh my God, this guy's a great guy.
Yeah.
Oh, very down to earth.
Yep. Most of the people, and I've run into a few celebrities.
Yeah.
And, if you ignore that part, they're just normal.
right.
and want to be treated
right.
normal.
Right.
Did all of the family work at the inn?
All.
Everybody?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I don't know, Elise and Paul probably.
Oh, yeah. I got from little Elise what she was doing. And
right.
I haven't heard, I did call Paul.
Yes.
I did a terrible thing. I called him and I didn't tell him who I was. And I said, this is your fourth grade school teacher and I want an oral history on the tea company. Dead silence. Miss Porter? Yes. Absolutely. Oh, thank you for that.
Paul is a great guy.
Oh, yes. Well, the whole family is, as far as I'm concerned.
No, no, no. Paul's the best, though, by far.
That's debatable.
No.
But, anyway.
He has a great heart.
I think everyone in the family does. I mean, the ones that I've talked with, like yourself, like Elise, and I know Paul,
okay,
are very yes. good to the community.
Yeah, very good. Paul's the top of the line.
Well, that's very good of you to say.
So.
What do you remember about the blizzard of 68?
Nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
Oh, all right. You were around then.
Yes. I would
Nothing.
Yeah, I would have been in grade school, eighth grade.
Okay. Ambulance. What do you remember about the beginning of the ambulance service?
Reese Harris walking around in a light blue one-piece uniform
mm-hmm.
with that.
Mm-hmm.
And they were starting it up in that garage where it is currently.
It was Hamsey's garage.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, I just remember a big to-do as far as you know, lots of conversations with Dad and Reese and probably Wilkinson.
Art Wilkinson?
Yeah. Yeah,
he was one of the early ones, wasn't he?
Yeah. Art, yeah. Oh. And Wheezy Kiefer was one of the early ones, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I think those are the...
And Rosemary Fidali?
Yeah, Rosemary. Yeah.
According to what your mother said, Reese Harris and his wife interviewed various fire departments and ambulance crews in the state and wrote the regulations for the ambulance services here in town. Do you know
her, he and Ginny, or?
Yeah, he and Ginny.
That may have been. Okay. I don't know. But Reese was the...
He was the mover and shaker, wasn't
yeah,
he, pretty much?
I think so.
Okay. Now, you've already told me that your dad ran for selectman and didn't make it, and your mother did.
Mm-hmm.
What do you remember about your mother running for office?
She was very pleased to show him how to do it.
Okay.
That was the main driver.
How long was she on the Board of Selectmen?
Was it like... She
it's
had
a two-year term.
Okay. I thought she did at least two terms.
I can look that up.
Yeah, at least two terms.
Have you done anything as far as boards or run for public office?
Assessment Board of Appeals. Forever. Since 2000 or something. And the only reason I do it is that I feel strong there has to be a voice. If there's a local party that needs tax relief, then I'm all for it and advocate for it. And the Republicans on the committee go, you can't do that. That's not our mission. I go, I don't really give a fuck. I'm doing it. And
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so we've been able to bring, relief to some local individuals that otherwise would not have.
They need it.
Yeah. Because otherwise with the weekend properties that drives everything up, blah, blah, blah. And and then Barbara, the assessor, is very good.
Oh, she's
excellent. Trying to figure out, if we bring it up to her, how to figure it out so that it's within the regulations.
Mm.
And so that's it just seems like you can affect some sort of change there.
Yeah. Well, I got my assessment and it had dropped again. And I went in and I said, I don't agree with this. Do you know that I have a retaining wall in the back? No. And I was, you know, questioned, do you want your taxes to go up? And I said, I want my taxes to be fair for what's actually on the property. And right. this wall was built in 2001, and you never put it on the card. So she said, well, I'll look it over. And she put it on the card. And when I went back in, she says, no, we're going to keep the assessment the way it is, but we put on the card that you have this.
Because
my property looks like a ski slope. And it, as you know, Chatfield Hill is on private, well, we're a private water company. So I have no town water. I have no town sewer. Mm-hmm. And I thought the assessment was fair, but I also felt that because I had this retaining wall that is a fixed wall, it should be noted. And that was fine.
And good for her to note it and say you're still the same.
Yeah, I appreciated that. But if it had gone up, it would have gone up.
No, she's a good egg.
She is. I did an excellent oral with her. And I went in and asked, and she says, oh, but I didn't grow up here. I said, no, I want your job. I want to know exactly what you do in your job.
Oh, that's good. She does a lot.
And I wouldn't know.
Right.
And this is why I've tried to do the tax collector, the assessor, the town controller, the select people, so that people have an idea of what these guys and gals actually do.
Right.
Because they do a lot more than you realize.
Right. And they have to listen to complaint after complaint.
Yes, they do. Which is why I go in and tell them a joke or thank them or whatever.
Yes.
Why did you get into real estate?
I thought to bring the kids back. We were doing nonprofit out west.
Ah.
So we were doing homeless and teenagers in Job Corps.
Mm-hmm.
And so the point was to come back and get the kids back here in these schools and try to give them a similar childhood.
You had a good childhood.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Because I was thinking we had Vic Clark.
Oh, yeah.
I love Vic Clark.
Yep.
And I loved his statement of, if it's a sunny day, that's not a work day. You work on the rainy days and you go out and paddle or ski or something.
That gives a balanced life.
That's right.
Do you think that?
Hey, Susan.
Think that you've given your children the childhood that you had to a degree?
To a degree. I think the town has changed. So.
Oh, it has.
Yeah,
it has.
It's completely different than what it was.
But I think the essence of caring and working together is still there.
Yeah. If Beckett is a good example.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So he's picked that up somewhere. And I think, like, when we graduated from Salisbury, whatever the speaker was, said that here's the main thing, is that much has been given to you, much will be expected, you know, socially.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if that's continued or not, but...
I think so. I interviewed Chiz Chandler a while back, and I like the ethos of the school. I like the mission statement of the school.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's changed.
Yeah. Oh, see. Oh, okay.
What's the name of your second son?
We have Beckett and then Griffin.
I thought it was Griffin, but...
Yeah. So he's down at Housatonic.
And your daughter?
Kathleen, and then...
Is Kathleen with a K or a C?
C. And then Rachel's a stepdaughter.
Wonderful names. Is there anything that you'd like to add to this interview that I haven't covered?
It's just that I've got to apply Vic's axiom more.
It's a sunny day. You shouldn't be here. Yes, but with real estate, you're out showing houses or doing building inspections.
Something.
Yeah.
But I just thought of that. That was Vic's main... he was a wonderful... So we had these wonderful people that actually had time. I'm not so sure the parents right now have as much time as the parents in 68 to 70.
No, they don't for a variety of reasons. And there's so many activities that the kids are involved in now that they weren't in the 60s and the 70s.
Right.
I find it distressing. I live in a neighborhood and there are children, but you don't see them out in the middle of the circle playing ball.
No.
They're with the video games or the computer. And That's a waste.
Yeah.
You know, you've got a balance. You've got a balance. You can play with a computer on rainy days.
I think we hit it at a wonderful point as far as children and having Vic and George Kiefer and, you know, Bam Whitbeck. The list goes on and on of people who had time to spend with us.
Mm-hmm. That's precious.
Yeah.
That's really precious.
Yeah. So.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
This has been great fun.
Yeah. No, if you would need anything else, happy.